Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
She's the best one that we've ever had. She sits on her hair and she's tall as my dad. And she tie-dyed my shirt and she pierced her own ear. And it's peace, man, cool. Yeah, the babysitter's
In Dar Williams' 1995 song, The Babysitter's Here. The babysitter is a hippie chick who teaches the adoring little girl she sits for a lesson about women's empowerment. Miriam Foreman Brunel argues that babysitters through the decades have been mirrors, reflecting Americans' larger fears about young women and their growing autonomy in society. Foreman Brunel is a professor of history at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and she joins me in studio. Good morning, and welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You trace the beginnings of babysitting in the United States to the 1920s with the rise of the modern teenage girl. Who took care of children for parents prior to the babysitter?
Well, it was really a variety of caretakers, and it depending on the class and the particular region. Of course, in the South in the 19th century, young girls as well as boys took care of babies, black and white, free and unfree, as did older women.
Were these mostly kinship structures doing this?
No, it was on plantations that would be the case where slave children, young children under the age of 12 would be doing that kind of activity. In urban poor neighborhoods, it would have been family, women who lived maybe in an apartment building that was true into the early years of the 20th century, siblings. So it was a whole variety, but there wasn't was an identified profession or vocation for and associated with teenage girls and dominated by teenage girls until the 20s, and that's really when it begins.
So that other part of your thinking on this, the modern teenage girl of the 1920s, who was she? How was she different from teens prior to the turn of the 20th century?
Well, what happens in the 1920s is there are a number of different historical forces. One is that teenage girls and teenagers generally are moving out of the workforce, being forced out of the workforce, much of it having to do with progressive child labor efforts. And they're going to high schools more than they had at any other period, and so they don't have an opportunity for earning money. At the same time, there's also the growth, really a burgeoning of the consumer culture and the commercial culture, and that draws adolescents, and particularly girls, toward that, and so gives them incentive also for making money. However, they much prefer to receive money from their parents in the form of allowances. And so while parents are looking for babysitters, at the same time, there aren't a whole lot available, something that has really persisted throughout the 20th century and in some ways continues to persist today, though, of course, the recession has made for a lot more babysitters.
Oh, interesting. We'll get to that in a moment. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Did you babysit when you were young? When did you start babysitting and why? What did you do with the money? What did you think of the work? How much did you make? Did you ever try to get a raise? Parents, is it harder to find a sitter? And what anxieties and issues have you encountered with babysitters? How much do you pay them? How much do you think they should make? 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Again, you can post comments on our page, The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC.org. You say babysitting boomed in the 1930s, and that surprises me because why would more families spend precious resources during the Great Depression, A, to go out, and B, on hiring someone to watch the kids while they were away?
That's a good question. It really is counterintuitive, right? But the fact of the matter is that what happens during the Depression, a number of different, there's kind of a convergence of forces. One is that adolescents are pushed out of the workforce as are women, in order to make spaces available for men as heads of households. So there aren't a lot of opportunities for them to make money and in the formal economy. So this is part of the informal economy. And so it's not only babysitting for children, it's also just a broad housekeeping kinds of chores that need to be accomplished. And it's really toward the end of the Depression. So really in like 1938, where you have a rising, there had been a flat birth rate during the Depression. People didn't have babies because they couldn't afford to raise them. But by the end of the Depression, there's more hope, and there's more, it seems as if there's greater prosperity. And so you have a rising birth rate and more optimism about the future. And what a lot of parents do is to just kind of redirect resources so that they have the opportunity to go out if they want to. And so you have this convergence. And of course, what's also happening is that girls' culture that begins in the 1920s continues to expand despite the economic contraction during the 1930s.
I wanted to talk about that girl culture. You in the 30s, too, you write of this rising conflict between girls who were becoming more autonomous through the money they raised through babysitting and adults who were anxious about that spending. Describe the cultural battle over makeup.
Over makeup, right. Well, what happens is that girls, they are becoming increasingly more interested in makeup. Makeup is becoming part of this beauty culture, which is being marketed. And they want to wear lipstick, and they want to wear bright colored lipstick, and they want to paint their nails. But these kinds of practices are still very much associated in the minds of many adults with prostitutes who really first pioneered those kinds of activities. And so if girls can't do this at home, they can't paint their nails or put on cosmetics at home, what they do is they wait until they go to a friend's house or they go babysitting. And so you see in articles in women's magazines giving advice to babysitters saying, you know, your employers don't like this. And this is something that we associate with painted ladies. I mean, they're not quite so explicit as that, but that's basically the message there. And so what you see is a battle over that particular kind of girls' culture practice, and something that continues up until the present. Parents will complain about, tattoos or piercings, right, or green hair or whatever it might be.
Belly buttons showing,
exactly.
Like little cropped shirts. Yeah, right. We're taking your calls on babysitting and the babysitter. 433-9692-212-433-WNYC. Donna from Denville, New Jersey, you're on WNYC with Miriam Foreman Brunel.
Hi.
Good morning.
I grew up, I think, as babysitting then and now is very different. I grew up in the, born in 52, so I started babysitting around age 11 in the early 60s, and my parents had a lot of children, and the whole neighborhood was teeming with children. My parents had maybe 10 at that time, and they eventually had 13. But I was the second oldest, and I was very capable. I took care of all my brothers and sisters when my mother was always pregnant and sick. So I was very capable, so I was able to babysit at a young age. But the thing is, it was a lot of competition because a lot of the families had kids old enough to take care of the younger ones. And babies and fewer jobs because parents really didn't go out a lot in my neighborhood. You know, they basically, that's all they did was had kids and they stayed home. But also, the work was very hard. And also, like, my sister is all babysat too, so we were all competing for the same few jobs.
Donna,
yes.
Go ahead. So you were babysitting for your siblings, but you also babysat other people's children. And what was harder, caring for your siblings or caring for other people's children?
Both were hard. They were hard in different ways. Caring for my own siblings, I would get in a lot more trouble when my parents came home if we were fighting or if there was something going wrong. It was really like a lot more responsibility. Babysitting for the other people's kids was hard because of the dynamics. You weren't familiar with their family dynamics. Mm-hmm. So just keeping everybody happy and keeping them from, from getting hurt and stuff was difficult, more difficult. But it was easier then because you could just open the door and let them go out.
Uh-huh.
Now,
yeah.
People have fewer kids, but all the activities are very planned. I mean, the kids are never allowed to just run out around the neighborhood without, being in structured, disciplined activities, very rarely.
Donna, thank you. Thank you for that call. Miriam, I wanted to get to this issue of some of the tensions that Donna was describing, anxieties of parents. The babysitter is a stereotype. We've got the sexy siren, which emerged in the 60s and 70s, as you point out, at the same time as women were experiencing more freedom through the sexual revolution. We've got the image of teenagers eating, which I frankly have to cop to. I did this when I babysat, eating an entire box of Twinkies from Mr. and Mrs. Barrand when I babysat their three kids, eating families out of house and home, spending the entire time on the phone rather than taking care of their little darlings. And you argue that these are all tropes that mirror our cultural anxieties about young women. Can you pick one and explain? Maybe the sexy siren one. We'll start there and just use that as an example.
Just to go back to what you were saying, it's not that these things don't go on. You ate a whole box of Twinkies. and I hear constantly stories from various people about the various kinds of things that they did, watching too much television or something like that. But the point is that these kinds of behaviors and activities become exaggerated in the popular culture, and they become exaggerated in the imaginations of adults.
And we have to leave that there, and certainly we know of how it's played out in books and movies like Halloween. Miriam Forman-Brunell, thank you for joining me here in the studio here on WNYC. She's the author of Babysitter, an American History, published by NYU Press. Stay tuned. More in the next hour of The Brian Lehrer Show.